What's up, guys? This is Justin Coffin for the 330 Sports Show. We are located in Youngstown Studio in downtown Youngstown, Ohio. Today is Tuesday, May 3rd, 2022. On today's show, a lot to get to. The NFL draft, obviously, was this past weekend. A lot of big stories in that. We will specifically talk about the Cleveland Browns, but we're going to talk about their AFC North foes. We're going to talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Baltimore Ravens, the Cincinnati Bengals as well. We will talk plenty about the Ohio State Buckeyes that were either in the draft or that are coming for next year's draft. We will touch base with the NBA playoffs, just with the series going on right now. Cleveland Guardians are about the streakiest team in the league. We'll talk about them. Kentucky Derby coming up this weekend. We'll get to that. And then just a little bit of a tease for Thursday's show. It's actually going to be a show that's already happened. We did it last year, but it's a great show to do year in and year out. It's a Mother's Day tradition. It's going to be a Mother's Day TV draft of all the best moms from TV. So we'll talk about that at the end of the show. Just touch on that, give it a little tease before Thursday. So let's get into what happened this weekend with, and we're going to start with the Cleveland Browns. So this past weekend, Browns obviously did not have a first round draft pick. They traded that to the Houston Texans in the Deshaun Watson trade. Then they turn around and trade their second round draft pick. They traded that pick number 44 overall to the Houston Texans, a familiar trade partner, and they get 68, 108, and 124 back in that trade. So I'll talk to you about those players that were drafted in those spots. Now, the Cleveland Browns, you know, like I said, they just basically got rid of those picks. But if you really, really look deep into it, in their first round, they get Deshaun Watson for that first round pick. Yeah, they give up a few more picks, but that is the, you know, the prize piece in that trade. In the second round, you get a 3-for-1 deal. And the Browns are a team that covets not just quality, but quantity as well. That gives you more opportunities to strike on some of those players. So for the second round pick, 44, they get 68, 108, and 124. In the fourth round, they traded pick 118 and they get they got back pick 156, another fourth rounder, and a fourth rounder next year. So pretty good deal there. In the fifth round, they traded out, they actually got a fifth round pick next year, accumulated that for trading out Troy Hill. Troy Hill was born here in Youngstown, Ohio, came over from the Rams last year, and they traded him back to the Los Angeles Rams this year. Unfortunate for him, he misses out on their Super Bowl championship run this year, but a really nice player. But the Browns, you know, we'll talk again about their draft pick, but they locked up Denzel Ward. They got Greedy Williams, whose contract is coming up in the near future. They also, you know, have Newsome under contract for a while. So there, you can't pay all of these guys. So that's where you replenish the picks. You kind of, restock and reload, with younger guys on cheaper deals. And then finally, their one fifth round pick they traded. If you think about it, would you take a fifth rounder for Amari Cooper? Absolutely. Amari Cooper, one of the top 12 wide receivers in the NFL. So if you really look at what the Browns gave up and what they got back, it's pretty, pretty solid pieces in that trade. So let's go through each of the Browns' 9 draft picks and some of their trades. I'm not going to go in depth and play by play and pretend like I know each of these guys inside and out, but I'm going to just, you know, give you a brief overview of what these guys bring to the table for the Cleveland Browns. So let's start with their very first pick. This was a third rounder. His name is Martin Emerson. He is a cornerback out of the University of Mississippi State. He comes from Mike Leach in the SEC. So in the Southeastern Conference, the SEC, he's playing against some of the top wide receivers in the country. And last year, he was the number one rated cornerback in the SEC. So comes from a pretty good pedigree, can play in the outside, can play in the inside, in the slot. And the slot is not an easy position to play. That's why they sent Troy Hill out. So maybe you're going to see Greg Newsom play inside. Maybe you're going to see this Emerson kid come in and play a little bit on the inside. We will see what happens with him. But he is a long, rangy corner. Most cornerbacks are between like 5'9 and 6 foot. One, this guy is about almost 6'3", so he should give you a lot of length, especially against those bigger wide receivers, your Jamar Chases, you know, in Pittsburgh, your Claypools, stuff like that, that you can go up and take some of those guys out, or at least, you know, have a longer guy to have a little bit more trouble with them. With the next pick, apparently, everyone in the Cleveland Browns draft room loved this guy, and they would have been happy taking him early in the second round in that middle 40s pick, but they get this guy at 78. His name is Alex Wright, and former wide receiver in high school, but goes to University of Alabama, Birmingham. And again, just because I don't know this guy's college resume or you guys don't know, like, if you would have told me Alex Wright before the draft, I wouldn't have known who you were talking about. But then you go in and look deep and see what he did in college. This guy puts up numbers, had the number one pass rush grade in the entire country based on percentage, on win percentage. So this guy should give you a lot of good things. I think he will probably not start this year. I think you're probably still bringing back Jadeveon Clowney. We'll kind of see what the Browns end up doing with him. You got Chase Winovich there. You got Alex Wright now. So the Browns are building some depth at that defensive line. And again, someone that's really young, that's a developmental player, but could impact the team already next season. So let's go to the third pick. This is the pick I was most excited about in the draft. Pick number 99 in the third round is David Bell. David Bell put up some of the best numbers in production in all of college football. Comes out as a junior from the University of Purdue, has enormous games against the best competition. Had a 200-plus receiving yard game against Notre Dame. Had a huge game against Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan State, Ohio State. You know, this guy just puts up numbers. Now, he did not test super well, wasn't the fastest guy. And again, when guys aren't super fast, you're going to hear he's quick more than fast. One of those kind of like a little bit of a, sounds like a knock, but it's honestly true. It's kind of like a Jarvis Landry. He's like, he's not super fast, you know, running in a foot race in a 40-yard dash. But if you're doing a 10-yard out, you know, you might not want a guy more than this guy. This guy's got some of the best hands in the draft, had the number one ranked most contested catches in the NCAA last year. So this guy will do some great, great things for you as a wide receiver for the Cleveland Browns. And they a steal for me at pick number 99. Now, a lot of people were unhappy with the trade down from 44. George Pickens was there. Sky Moore was there. You had some other available players that, you know, a lot of people like. But, you know, again, I don't know what the Browns brass was thinking in Berea. I don't know what their board looks like. You know, most people don't unless you're on the inside. And unless you're on the inside, you know, David Bell might have tested out as one of their better players in the entire draft. So that is what we're going to have to wait and see. But I think this guy could start absolutely right away for you. So let's go to day three now. So day three starts the fourth round. So this is a fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh round. Let's start with Perrion Winfrey, who most scouts had this guy as the number 38 to number 44 player in the entire draft. Falls to 108. The Browns snag him. And this is kind of a cool stat I heard. He and one of his teammates, who the Browns later drafted, both wore the number 8 and both went to the University of Oklahoma. But one played offense, one played defense, which you can do in college. This guy, too, I don't know a whole lot about him, but he's an interior defensive lineman who can get after the quarterback, which is a rare trait for a defensive lineman. Most of them are run stoppers or, you know, plug the gap, stuff like that. This guy can do a little bit of both, can stop the run, can get after the quarterback with his speed. And I just want you guys to go out and look at his post draft interview and the excitement level he brings to the team. That is something the Browns sorely need. They, you know, this kid is young. He is fierce. He is about to, you know, just take over. He was the Senior Bowl MVP as well this year. So his draft stock was on the rise, but somehow slipped to the Browns at 108. The Browns then turn around, make another trade. Now the Minnesota Vikings were in on this trade where the Browns sent them their pick number 118. They get back pick number 156 and a fourth rounder next year. Now the GM for the Minnesota Vikings is the former Cleveland Browns assistant general manager. So, you know, you kind of have some ties there. So that was kind of neat for those two to make a trade in that draft. The next pick. Now, this is what I was calling for. Joe, I think you'll probably love this next pick. We drafted a kicker in the fourth round, and we got rid of all of our other kickers, our practice squad kicker and Chase McLaughlin. They are gone. It is all on the shoulders of Cade York, who was the number 124th player taken in the draft, the number one kicker taken in the draft. And by all accounts, this kid is the real deal. I listened to an interview with him. It was about 5 minutes. And he said he just has this routine. He talks to himself when he's going through the kick. He kind of drowns everything out and he focuses on the kick. And he's like, when you go through the same routine every time, you don't have time to think about anything else except for making that kick. And I love that answer. So the Browns, whether you like them taking a kicker in the fourth round or not, hopefully got their guy, because a good team is going to be in some close games. And those games, especially if you look at last year's playoffs, you know, the Bengals were in a ton of close games. They had a rookie kicker last year. He helps get them to the Super Bowl. Look just in your division. The Baltimore Ravens have Justin Tucker, probably the best kicker in the NFL. You got Evan McPherson in your division. And then the Steelers have a really, really good kicker as well. So now hopefully the Browns have their own weapon. And, you know, you brought in a returner, Jakeem Grant, in free agency. You got a kicker and you traded for a punter. So hopefully the Browns have all three aspects taken care of now in the special teams department. So Joe, real quick, what do you think about a fourth round?
I freaking love it. Honestly, they go first round draft pick a kicker and I would have been cheering just as much. Right. Stupid, but happy.
Hey, it's all right. But at the end of the day, it's like, as long as you do your job, no one's going to complain about you, you know?
So here's my complaint about kickers in general. If you've ever been to a game live, mm-hmm. you watch these kickers lining up with like 60 yarders that they just nail.
Yeah.
And then they say, like, in game scenario, they can't kick as long as they can in a regular one. But why? Like, his answer, if he goes in his zone mm-hmm. and like pretends like nobody's there, it's just like kicking the 60 yarders pregame.
True.
Right.
True. Yeah. And this guy was dynamite from 50 yards and beyond in college. There's this one game against Florida and it was the COVID year, so it was kind of a weird situation, but it was completely filled with fog. They had to like show the game on TV on the aerial camera. It was like that foggy. He kicked a 57 yarder to win the game. And it was just awesome. So
I think kickers should make every extra point for sure. Mm-hmm. And most of the reasonable ones, and basketball, they should make every shot from the free throw line.
Yeah. at least 80% in basketball and at least 90% from field goal range.
That's reasonable.
And from the, I don't know, a field goal kicker, I'll give them 2 misses every 100. You got to make 98% of those extra points, you know? So, and when it's crunch time, 100%. Exactly. And real quick, a trade I mentioned earlier, they shipped out Troy Hill. They got a fifth round draft pick back for him next year. And again, Troy Hill makes a decent contract. So you're saving a little bit of money there. You bring in the Fletcher kid that's the rookie. You know, I'm sure they're going to pick up another guy in free agency before this is all said and done, whether it's after training camp or cuts or whatever that might be. But, you know, save a little bit of money there towards the draft cap and, you know, hopefully be able to bring in another veteran wide receiver or Clowney or whoever it might be for the Browns. Again, another pick. The Browns take a running back. Now, this signaled a red flag for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if I'm in this camp or not, but you have, obviously, you have Nick Chubb on the roster. You have Kareem Hunt on the roster. You have D'Ernest Johnson on the roster. And you have kind of like a hybrid wide receiver running back. His name's escaping me. The kid from UCLA last year they drafted. But they bring in Jerome Ford from the University of Cincinnati. He was an Alabama transfer, so you know he has that pedigree of being a great, great running back. Did a lot of nice things in college. So does this signal the end of Kareem Hunt with the Browns? Makes a lot of money. I don't think the Browns would ever get rid of Nick Chubb, but I don't see him getting another long-term extension. But what do you think? Kareem Hunt?
See, that running back position is so weird to me. They have that 1-2 punch. They had a big fullback. You'd expect them to do certain things, and they miss like opportunities to have fresh guy receiving back and whatever. I don't think they ever use their back. So maybe this is a shakeup that maybe lets them use their running backs a little more traditional manner.
Yeah. And you know, honestly, if you look at Nick Chubb's numbers, he's one of the most consistent running backs in the league, top two, top three. But he doesn't have that bulk of carries that the other guys do. So my question is, you know, what are you kind of like saving him for? Are you saving him for the postseason? Are you trying to extend his career? Kareem Hunt doesn't get a whole lot of carries. So it's kind of, it's kind of a platoon, if you will, in the backfield. So maybe this is, hey, let's get Nick Chubb a lot more carries. One of the best backs in the league, you can bring in, the name's escaping me, the kid from UCLA, but maybe you bring him in and, he was our sixth rounder last year, but maybe you bring him in. He can, get some carries out of the backfield. Dimitric Felton. Thank you. Yeah. Dimitric Felton is the guy I was looking for, but the Browns might go a little bit more 11 personnel, which is three wide receivers, one running back. And we'll see. And Derek, I see. Thank you for sharing. Yeah. Derek just mentioned Dimitric Felton, but yeah, definitely hope the Browns have something in mind here, but it could be you're grooming that Jerome Ford to kind of take over Kareem Hunt's responsibilities and maybe get him off the books in a year or so to save a little money, because the Browns as an analytical football team value young players. They value upside players and guys on rookie contracts, especially when you're going to be paying your quarterback and several other players a lot of money going into the future.
It almost has to be a throwing league, honestly.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. And, the Browns have a lot more to improve on. They have a great roster, but they still have some holes to fill. Speaking of the other number eight from Oklahoma, they took Michael Woods the second. By the way, they're kind of taking a lot of Oklahoma guys this year. I think they took three in Winfrey, Woods, and we'll talk about the other guy here in a minute. But I believe they're trying to ship another Oklahoma Sooner out, if I'm not mistaken. which we'll talk about that guy in a minute too. But Michael Woods the second comes in. He was originally in originally an Arkansas Razorback, transferred to Oklahoma, had a nice career, nothing spectacular, but a nice wide receiver. So the Browns building depth in that wide receiver room. And, but again, I still think they're going to bring in a veteran. And Isaiah Thomas, not the basketball player, is the other, Oklahoma Sooner they took. And, another defensive player, another defensive lineman, to build some depth there. And again, these late round guys are kind of like lottery tickets. You know, a lot of times they're not going to work out, but if you hit big, you can really hit big on some of these guys and you can cash that in because they can give you immediate impact, but not cost you a whole lot of money. And then ironically, do you know where Baker Mayfield went to school first? Texas Tech. And they took a Texas Tech guy, Dawson Deaton, a center, again, to build some depth. They you know, got rid of JC Treader. So Nick Harris is going to be their starting center, bringing in another guy from Seattle and possibly this Dawson Deaton. Can either be a practice squad guy for you or maybe a backup guy, depending on how he plays in the league. So we'll see. So overall, looking at the Browns, Martin Emerson, first pick, Alex Wright, David Bell, Perrion Winfrey, Cade York, Jerome Ford, Michael Woods the second, Isaiah Thomas, Dawson Deaton were their picks that they brought in. So they bring in 9 different guys next year's picks. So the Browns will not again have a first round pick next year in the 2023 draft. And I know this is looking ahead way forward, but they do retain their second round pick. They will either have their own third round pick or a compensatory pick next year. They will have 2 fourth rounders next year, 2 fifth rounders next year, a 6th and a 7th round in 2023. And they did pick up 2 extra picks in this year's draft. And again, as I mentioned, if you look at it this year, you get Deshaun Watson as your first rounder and Amari Cooper as your fifth rounder. So a pretty good deal to add on to those picks there. All right. Sorry, now,
one of your
that's okay. That's okay. So let's go over the elephant in the room. And that is Baker Mayfield. What to do? I saw this comic in cleveland.com, but Andrew Berry saying, you know, bidding starts at $18.9 million. Who wants him? Going once, going twice. Well, it's going to be a while because nobody seemed to want Baker this weekend. Apparently, there was a lot of discussions with Carolina. Carolina did not take a quarterback in the first round, did not take a quarterback in the second round, didn't take a quarterback in the third round, but then ended up trading up very, very late in the third round and taking Matt Corral. Seattle did not take a quarterback in this draft, so they are still a player. I think Detroit is still a player, but you know, it might be a wait and see with Baker. I don't know. You and I both thought he'd get traded last weekend. Didn't happen. So what happens next? It's a guessing game.
I don't think his stock value is very high right now as a distraction. If you got your room together, you don't want your room to fall apart because of a personality.
Sure.
It's what, because he's got a chip on his shoulder. He's going to be pissed off and he's going to create distractions.
No doubt.
I'd resist too.
I would just right now, until you find a trade partner, I would pay him to stay away. That's what I would do. I would just say, stay away, Baker. You can get your contract. We'll pay you whatever you're owed up until we can find a trade partner. And, you know, maybe a quarterback gets injured in camp. Maybe someone, they bring in their quarterbacks in mini camp and team OTAs and stuff like that. And they're like, oh, these are who we have. Maybe we need to bring in somebody to challenge. And again, we don't know what goes on in the negotiations behind the scene. If the Browns are offering to pick up $1 million or all of his contract, you know, but I'm guessing probably somewhere in the middle. And you know, if they have to eat some of that money, they have to eat some of it. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, it's addition by subtraction. So we'll see what happens there. All right. We got to talk about our opponents because as anyone knows, you got to know your enemy. You got to know what they're doing. And we're going to start with the Baltimore Ravens. They ended up having the first of the AFC North picks in the first round. So the Baltimore Ravens had probably, and they're just good at the draft. They, you know, every single year, but here's one of my pet peeves with the draft. I hate, and let me say this really loud, hate grades on drafts because we don't know, you know, like you're basing this on what someone at ESPN or Pro Football Focus or somebody else is telling you, you know, you're not, you know, do you see NFL teams giving out grades for draft picks? No, because they have a better understanding. They know what they're talking about. You know, experts, a lot of times, yeah, there's probably a pretty good consensus. Like, you know, I don't study the draft as much as Todd McShay or a Mel Kiper, but I can probably come up with a similar top 25 and probably be more accurate than those guys at any given point.
So without seeing any performance, what are you actually grading?
Like exactly.
How you did?
I think it's based a lot of times on name recognition. Honestly, it's like, oh, I remember that guy from college. That's a pretty cool name. I think he might do this in the NFL. So to me, a lot of times it's based on fit. And I get like sometimes a team gets good value. Like we'll talk about the Ravens in a minute. They get the number 14 pick. They get Kyle Hamilton out of Notre Dame. A lot of people said he should be a top 5 to 10 player, but those teams all passed on him. So, you know, they had other guys ranked ahead of him too. So in my opinion, it's just kind of one of those things that's, you know, let's give it a year. Let's give it 2 years. Let's give it even 3 years. And then go ahead and retroactively grade that draft because
and it means something.
Yeah, because then it's like a lot of these guys might not even make it to a second contract in the NFL. And who's the best pick of the last 25 years? Tom Brady. What round was he taken in? The sixth. But I bet you if you looked back at a draft grade back then, somebody probably were like, oh, the Patriots taking Tom Brady. That's a C pick in the sixth round. It's like, well, what would you give that pick right now? You know, I mean, you can't give it over 100%, but you know, that's about as nailed a pick as possible. So I don't know. In my opinion, I cannot stand draft grades, but that's my opinion. I can see opinion.
Though, like a lot of people who don't follow college sports, they don't know how to feel about what mm-hmm. their team just drafted. So it mm-hmm. gives them an idea comparatively
right.
who they got in value. So I could see it speaking to that, but
yeah,
not much more than that.
And again, what we're going to do here, I'm going to go ahead and review some of these draft picks and say, well, this guy has a lot of upside and potential, and this team needs this fit and that fit and that fit. But it doesn't necessarily mean those guys are going to pan out, right. but it maybe gives them a better chance to succeed. So we'll see. But in my opinion, draft grades are kind of garbage. They're kind of garbage. So, but the Ravens, let's just talk a little bit about some of the guys they picked up. They pick up Kyle Hamilton, the safety out of Notre Dame. They pick up, you know, again, arguably the best center in the draft, depending on who you talk to, but they ended up trading Marquise Hollywood Brown. They sent that pick to Arizona and they get Tyler Linderbaum, the center. And they also shipped out their third round pick. They picked up David Ajabo, who a lot of people said was going to be a really high pick for the Ravens in the first round, but tore his Achilles. Might have to kind of redshirt this year, but we'll see. But he ends up going 45, picked up some other really, really nice players in this draft. But Ravens are usually pretty good at this, so we'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's go to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Pittsburgh Steelers. They were the only team in the first two rounds to take a quarterback. At number 20 overall in the first round, they take Kenny Pickett right down the hallway from them, from the University of Pittsburgh. Now, Kenny Pickett, the big knock on him is he has small hands. So, you know, playing in cold weather, will he be able to have that accuracy on his passes? Will he be able to hold on to the football? I don't know. We'll see. George Pickens goes in the second round. That's a really nice pick out of Georgia. DeMarvin Leal, the defensive end out of Texas A&M. Calvin Austin, that's a really nice pick. But here's something really, really interesting about the Pittsburgh Steelers. They have four pairs of brothers now on their team. They drafted Connor Haywood, a fullback out of Michigan State. So now they have the Watt brothers, the Hayward brothers, the Edmund brothers, and the Davis brothers on the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I thought that was one of the cooler stories from the weekend. It was the Cam Hayward, who was the Ohio State Buckeye, who's been a longtime Pittsburgh Steeler, probably a Hall of Famer, didn't even know his brother was getting drafted to the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I thought that was really kind of a neat story. But
this reminds me, we had a competitive football league for all of our internal, and one guy couldn't make it, so Deb picked all their players in the draft.
Yeah,
and she picked all players named Ryan, so she made it and Matt Ryan counted.
Okay,
right, but she liked the name Ryan, so she drafted all a whole team worth of Ryan. So what if you could just buy a family and have the family play your entire defense or your entire offense.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty amazing.
Yeah, that would be pretty good. You're getting at least a couple studs from the Watt family, from the Bosa family, you know, a couple of those guys. But Ryan, you'd have a lot of a lot of Irish quarterbacks on in that league. So that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. All right, let's go to the final team in the AFC North, the Cincinnati Bengals. They had the fewest picks in the draft. They take a safety out of Michigan with their first pick, Dax Hill. They take another safety in the second round, Cam Taylor-Britt out of Nebraska, which tells me one of their two safeties, either Von Bell or I believe it is Jesse Bates, will probably be too high priced and not be able to afford them and be on their way out. And you know, some of the other guys, I can't claim to know a whole lot about them, but Cincinnati didn't take a lot of offensive. They took one offensive lineman, but they take three safeties in this draft. So very, very interesting picks there for the Bengals.
Don't be throwing on Cincy. No way.
No, no. A lot of ball hawks there, but we'll see what happens with the Bengals, their defense, and if they can protect Joe Burrow. Now, let's go to the Ohio State Buckeyes, because they had, I thought they might have seven players taken in the draft, but they ended up having six guys go. So Garrett Wilson goes in the first round, 10th pick overall to the New York Jets. The very next pick, the New Orleans Saints trade up at 11, taking the other wide receiver, Chris Olave. And I'll talk to you about the next pick, number 12, in a minute. But next round, or actually into the third round, Nicholas Petit-Frere goes to the Tennessee Titans. Jeremy Ruckert, who grew up as a New York Jets fan, pretty cool, gets drafted by the New York Jets. Tyreek Smith gets drafted in the fifth round to the Seattle Seahawks. And then Thayer Mumford, who is a really, really nice player, but ended up falling because of back issues. He falls to the seventh round and ends up with the Oakland Raiders or Las Vegas Raiders. But Haskell Garrett, big surprise in this draft, did not get drafted. He was first team All-American 2 years ago, a former five-star recruit. I don't know what happened with him slipping and falling out of the draft completely, but he was picked up by the Tennessee Titans as an unrestricted free agent. Master Teague was picked up by the Chicago Bears, so now joins Justin Fields in Chicago and hopefully can make the squad there. Now, this is very interesting. I heard this over the weekend. There are most Pro Bowlers come from the first round. The second most Pro Bowlers come from the second round. Can you guess where the most Pro Bowlers come after that? So first round, most Pro Bowlers, second round.
It's got to be a trick question. It's not. I'm going to say third. I'm going to say fourth.
It's actually undrafted free agents.
Really?
All become the third most Pro Bowl selections. I just heard that stat and I couldn't believe it. So kind of an interesting stat there. So we'll see, you know, so maybe some of these guys that aren't picked up, that maybe slid a little bit, disappointed, have that chip on their shoulder and can maybe make some NFL rosters. So pretty cool there for them. But this was really neat. And in this next picture we're going to show you are three Ohio State Buckeyes from the 2020 season. You have Garrett Wilson, number five, Chris Olave, number two, and Jameson Williams, number six. Jameson Williams last year ended up transferring to Alabama, becomes their number one receiver. But these guys went 10, 11, and 12 in the first round of the draft this year. So very, very cool, which makes me think the winner of this year's draft is the Ohio State wide receiver coach, Brian Hartline, who himself was a former draft pick. So really cool there. And this was the second time in 3 years that three Ohio State former teammates were picked back to back to back. And just 2 years ago, they went 1, 2, and 3 with Joe Burrow, who ended up transferring to LSU, Chase Young, and Jeff Okuda. So really, really cool there. And Ohio
really
State
helps with recruiting, man.
It really, really does. So I want to take a peek real quick into the future. Possibly, we're not going to do a mock draft or anything like that, but I want to take a peek for the 2023 possible Buckeyes that could go in the first round next year, or I shouldn't say first round, but that could be drafted next year. CJ Stroud, obviously, if he comes out next year, probably at worst the number three pick in the draft, but he's going to go 1, 2, or 3 as long as, you know, he stays healthy. Jackson Smith and Jigba, he'll be a first round pick next year. DeJuan Jones is about 6'8", 370 pounds, offensive tackle. Somebody will pick him up in the first or second round. Zach Harrison, Paris Johnson, Ronnie Hickman, Josh Proctor, Matthew Jones, Teron Vincent, Cam Brown, Tanner McAllister, and possibly Julian Fleming if he sticks around. But all those Buckeyes could be possibly drafted next year. Now, there's a good chance some of those guys will come back for a redshirt junior or senior season, but there's a good chance that the Buckeyes will have 10 upwards of 10 guys drafted next year. We do have one Youngstown State Penguin drafted in this year's draft, Andrew Ogletree. He is a tight end. He goes to the Indianapolis Colts, round 6, pick 192 overall. So congratulations to Andrew Ogletree. That's just kind of a cool name, too, for a tight end. Like, a figure, you know, like, go up and get the ball. Go up and get the ball like Ogletree, you know, but
a Crabtree cool, was the other one.
Exactly. So yeah.
You put a tree in it and you're big and cook it up.
Exactly. Big, go locate the ball and get up there and climb that tree. All right. So, and then just some other Youngstown connections in the draft. Former Youngstown State basketball player, who actually ended up transferring to Clemson this past season to play basketball, has received an invitation to attend NFL rookie camp by the Jacksonville Jaguars. That his name is Nas Bohannon, was a really, really nice player at Youngstown State 2 years ago. And I think he averaged about 6-7 points a game for the Clemson Tigers this past season in the ACC. Arkansas offensive tackle and former Warren Harding product, Myron Cunningham, has been signed as an undrafted free agent by the Houston Texans. He graduated from Warren Harding in 2016. He's a big dude, 6'6", 325. And then finally, former YSU linebacker Grant Dixon has also received a rookie minicamp invite from the Indianapolis Colts. So two Youngstown State players going to Indianapolis Colt minicamp, and another guy going to the Jacksonville Jaguars. So we'll see if any of those guys catch on. I actually had a former basketball player, was a senior this year at Texas Tech. So I'm hoping he will still get signed possibly as an undrafted free agent. He's kind of a big wide receiver or small tight end, whichever you want to look at it, but a big dude, Travis Kuntz. So we hope to hear something, possibly him getting signed by a team as an unrestricted free agent.
So what do you think the best player to get drafted from a local school, Northeast Ohio school? What do you think, made it furthest
ever?
In your career? Yeah. Just one that pops out of your head.
Well, I mean, if you go back in history, there's a good amount. I mean, Bernie right down the street in Boardman, Paul Warfield played for the Browns and like a little bit before my time, but was one of the best wide receivers and played a little bit of running back and wide receiver at Ohio State. Pretty awesome player. I'm trying to think. We've had a bunch of local guys. The best center in the NFL right now is Corey Linsley from Boardman as well. I'm sure I'm probably missing a few. We've had a bunch of wide receivers come through here, a couple from Warren Harding.
What's that one receiver? I believe he went with the Washington Commandos. And I haven't heard anything from him. I think he went to not Hiram. What's that?
To Mount Union.
Yes.
He is a DJ Shark, I think. And I think he signed a deal with Detroit in the offseason. But I believe that's him. If I'm wrong, somebody can correct me on that, but there's been a few Mount Union guys that have drafted and went on to nice careers in the NFL. But yeah, if you guys have some, you know, just off the top of my head, those are the main guys that come. Obviously, Maurice Clarett didn't quite pan out in the NFL. He was a third round pick. Garcon. Oh, Pierre Garçon, yeah, yes. Good pick. Good pick. And Cecil Shorts was the one I was thinking. I'm not DJ Shark. But yeah, Pierre Garçon was an absolute stud for a long, long time. And he connected with Peyton Manning on a ton of routes there. But yeah, that's a Good
is
call.
That really 2008? Holy
I know.
Crap,
it seems like by. So long I've, ago. That's a name I haven't heard of in a long time, but he was a really good wide receiver for a very, very long time. That's a good name pull there from the past. I wonder what Pierre Garçon's up to nowadays. But really, really nice player.
He's probably an influencer on TikTok, and he dances in the evenings. Wait,
I mean, that's about the coolest name you can pull there, too. Pierre Garçon.
Is that French?
So, yeah, you know, he had some time with Indy. Looks like San Francisco. I'm not sure what other teams. But, yeah, really nice career. I think you said Washington he was with. So, yeah, that's a... And I don't know how he got to Mount Union, but he caught on there and did some great, great things.
Okay, he did.
So we go from talking a little bit about Ohio State, a little bit about YSU, a little bit about Mount Union, but let's go to the college team that kind of stole this year's draft. That was the Georgia Bulldogs. They break Ohio State's record from 2004 of 14 players selected. And LSU's from just 2 years ago of 14 players selected. They had
whole squad.
15 guys go in this year's draft. So they had in the first round, Trayvon Walker, number one overall, number 13 overall, Jordan Davis goes to the Eagles. Number 22 overall, Quay Walker goes to the Packers. Number 28 overall goes to the Packers as well, to his teammate Devontae Wyatt, who, by the way, the Packers, again, take two defensive players in the first round, which Aaron Rodgers just had to love, you know, just like, thanks for getting me another weapon, guys. Yeah, they did take a wide receiver in the second round, but it's like, dude, you got two first rounders. Can you just give me one of those guys as an offensive playmaker? Lewis Seen was the final pick of the first round. So five guys from Georgia go in the first round. In the second round, they had two more guys, George Pickens to the Steelers, James Cook as a running back to the Bills. Third round, they had N'Kobe Dean, who was my favorite player of the draft. And a lot of people had him ranked like 17th overall. Falls to number 83, goes to the Philadelphia Eagles. Channing Tindall, a linebacker, goes to the Dolphins at number 102. In the fourth round, they had Zamir White, another running back who went to the Raiders. Their punter freaking went. That's just insult to injury. That's like, you guys want to see how good we are? We're going to send our punter to the league too and make that our 15th guy drafted. But Jake Kamada goes to the Buccaneers. And then in the sixth round, they had four more guys go to close it out. They had a two guards in Justin Schaefer, Jameer Saylor. And then Darian Kendrick, who somehow slipped all the way to 212. And then the next pick, the tight end, John Fitzpatrick, goes to the Falcons at 213. But Georgia, this past year, set the record, 15 players. Ohio State in 2004 had 14 guys go. LSU, as I mentioned, 2 years ago. Ohio State, again, in 2016, had 12 guys go. And Alabama, just a couple years ago, had 12 guys go as well. So the new bar has been set for NFL draft picks. And let's close it out here on the NFL draft. Not a good quarterback draft, obviously. Kenny Pickett goes first, not first overall, but 20th overall to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And that's the latest a quarterback was taken off the board since 1997, which usually shows you how valuable and coveted that quarterback situation. And, you know, a lot of teams just reach for those guys. But the player that was taken that latest in that draft, I love this guy's name, Jim Drunkenmiller. So what a name, what a name. But there were nine trades in the first round. Two of those trades included Hollywood Brown, the Ravens' number one wide receiver, going to the Arizona Cardinals, and A.J. Brown, no relation, going to the Philadelphia Eagles from the Tennessee Titans. Six receivers went in the first 18 picks, but I bet the over of seven receivers going in the first round. The next 14 picks, no receivers. So, you know, hit the under. Zero Texas Longhorns drafted. Texas is kind of the hotbed for football in this country, and that is the premier university in their state, and zero 0 Texas Longhorns drafted. 10 teams, that was a record, did not have a pick in the first round with all the trades. And the SEC, this was not the record, but the SEC had 34 players taken in the first 33 rounds. So basically, that's one third of one out of every three picks was basically from the SEC, if you, you know, divide that out over the first 100 or so picks. So pretty crazy there. All right. Real quick, check in with the NBA playoffs. So we are into the second round now. All the first round teams have been eliminated. So Miami took out Atlanta. Philadelphia took out Toronto. Milwaukee took out Chicago. Boston takes out the Nets. The Suns take out the Pelicans. The Mavericks take out the Jazz. The Warriors take out the Nuggets. And the Memphis Grizzlies take out the Timberwolves. So right now, all those series have started. They are all the teams are up one game to none. Miami's up one game to none. They will play tomorrow night against Philadelphia. Miami has an easier path now. Joel Embiid has an orbital fracture and a concussion. An orbital fracture. I've had that happen before. It is, you wouldn't wish it on anyone. Basically, it's your eye socket gets broken, and it's awful. But you know, he's going to be out for a little while, and even if he comes back, he's not going to be the same guy until that's all healed. So I like Miami to advance. Milwaukee and Boston. Milwaukee, the former champs last year, are taking on the Celtics. The Bucks are up one game to none on the favorite Boston Celtics. I still like the Celtics to win that series, but they've kind of dug themselves a hole a little bit. Phoenix wins last night, takes a 1-0 series lead over the Dallas Mavericks. And they go up one game to none. That game, the next game, game two, will be tomorrow night at 10 o'clock. And then Golden State and Memphis will play tonight, Tuesday, at 9:30. Golden State looks to go up 2-0 in that series on the road in Memphis. So that's a quick look at the NBA. Let's talk real quick about the Cleveland Guardians. We got about 5 minutes here. So here's a look real quick at their May schedule. They got the first win in May over the Oakland Athletics. They will now take on San Diego tonight at home. They got the Blue Jays, in a little homestand here coming up. They are 10-12. Look at this, though. This is insane. So series this far, everything this year has been a streak for this team. So at Kansas City, you lose the first two games, you win the next two, you're 2-2. At Cincinnati, you win the next two, you're on a four-game winning streak, you go 4-2. Versus San Francisco, they come into town, they sweep you, you lose three in a row, now you're at 4-5. Chicago comes into town, they had a rain out in there, but they won all three games, they moved to 7-5. Then you go to New York, you get swept, you lose all three, you go to 7-8. You go to LA, you lose all four, you're on a seven-game losing streak, and you go to 7-12. Then you follow that up by going to Oakland and sweeping them and getting back to 10-12. So literally, everything this year, the first four games were a split, but everything this year has been a streak for this Cleveland Guardians team. So they're at 10-12. So basically, they're consistently inconsistent, if you want to look at it like that. But very, very interesting this year. I don't remember a team, winning so much and then losing so much. And we're obviously only 22 games into the season, but some crazy, crazy numbers there. Let's look at some of the team leaders early on. Again, only 22 games in. Shane Bieber leading the team in ERA as expected. He's got about 29 innings pitched this year. Emmanuel Clase with 4 saves on the season. Owen Miller leading the team in hitting at .378. They got a few guys. Now, they're pretty top heavy with hitting. Ramirez was the American League Player of the Month. Stephen Kwan was the American League Rookie of the Month. Owen Miller's playing some great baseball, but they have a lot of guys that are really struggling at the plate right now. But Jose Ramirez, again, I think he's hitting about .340, 7 home runs, and 28 RBIs. To put that into perspective, the next closest guy on the team with RBIs has 12. So 16 more in just the first 22 games for Jose Ramirez. And then Miles Straw, who is quickly becoming a Cleveland fan favorite, has 5 steals on the season. So through 22 games, again, the ERA is kind of middle of the pack. Guys aren't going deep in games. That's where the Indians dollar in the swear jar. That's where the Guardians, that's where the Guardians are going to make their, you know, run, is when the pitching starts going deeper into games. But just kind of middle of the pack right now. Nothing too fancy, nothing too great. And hitting surprisingly has been, again, pretty solid. But again, it's so streaky. Some games they're scoring one run, but then they're scoring 17 runs in other games. So that's skewing the stats a little bit. But right now they're 10th in runs, 5th in hits, middle of the pack, 20 in home runs. 251 batting average sounds really low to me, but that's fourth best in the entire league, which shows you how average is way down and strikeouts are way up. On base percentage, 314, again, middle of the pack, and slugging percentage is pretty high at about 40.5 there. So finally, let's go real quick to the Kentucky Derby. We will have the 148th running of the horses at Churchill Downs in Louisville, Kentucky this Saturday. The post time is roughly 6:57. You get all the pageantry there, and I think there's four other races that lead up to the big race. So, Joe, I don't know if that's too small on the screen, but do you have a favorite name out of those horses that are on the list?
Charge It.
Charge It. That's pretty good. Aggressive. Pretty good. If I got to pick one, I don't know. I kind of like Crown Pride a little bit. I don't know why. It just sounds kind of cool. Summer is tomorrow. That's a good philosophy. Okay. What?
In Northeast Ohio, summer is forever away.
It's either summer or miserable.
20 to 1. So that's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see. You know, like, again, some of these odds are the post. Just real quick, Messier is up there. Epicenter is one of the favorites.
There's no money in Epicenter, though.
Yeah. No. Zandon is up there as one of the favorites. And a lot of times it's based on the post position that some of these horses get. So we will see what happens. But, to close this out, because I will not be doing a live show on Thursday, I'm actually going to be in Florida. I want to get this out there for any of my bourbon people out there, but a mint julep is kind of the pride and jewel go-to drink of the Kentucky Derby. So a mint julep, if you're listening to this on podcast, let me read the recipe in case you can't see it on screen. So 2 ounces of bourbon, half an ounce simple syrup, 3 fresh mint leaves, and crushed ice. You muddle the mint leaves, you fill it with crushed ice, and you top it with simple syrup and bourbon. And I will tell you, if you've never had a mint julep, it is one of the best drinks out there. Joe, you ever had one?
I've not.
You got to try it. We'll have to make some sometime. We have some of the ingredients down here, but we'll need to get some of that simple syrup, and we got the bourbon. That's what
that covered.
Yeah, we got the bourbon. That's what it's done. But I highly recommend making one of those this weekend. But that's really all I got. We will have a Mother's Day show for you on Thursday. It is a replay of last year, but I will say this: if you haven't seen it, it will be new to you, and it will be awesome. It is one of my favorite shows we've ever done. It is a Mother's Day TV mom's draft of some of the best movie characters, and this will apply in 20 years from now. Maybe add one or two characters to it, but these are some of the best moms in all of the TV shows that have ever been out there. Highly recommend watching that on Thursday. So for Joe, I'm Justin. Go out and buy something for your mom. Take care of her. She takes care of you. Everybody, enjoy your sports week. We're going to have a bunch of different shows for you coming up this week. But for Joe again, I'm Justin. Thanks for tuning into Youngstown Studio. We will talk to you guys soon.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.